Hello, Sand Sounds listeners. This is Michael Shannon, your Sand Sounds volunteer, presenting the major news articles from the Monday, April 6, 2026 edition of Tucson's Arizona Daily Star. Before we begin with the headline articles, let's check out what kind of weather is in store for us. Today's weather cloudy, highs to 83 degrees Fahrenheit, east-southeast winds shifting to southwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight's weather, some passing clouds, lows to 57 degrees Fahrenheit, winds south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow's forecast predicts sunny skies, highs to 86 degrees Fahrenheit, winds northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And now from the Arizona Daily Star front page, the first article is titled, Trump Threats Follow Rescue. This article was written by Matthew Lee, Constantine Toropin, Sam Metz, and Sam Magdy of the Associated Press. Dateline Washington. President Donald Trump made new threats to escalate strikes in Iran on Sunday, a day after U.S. forces pulled off a dramatic rescue of an aviator whose plane fell behind enemy lines when Iran grounded days earlier. Iran showed no signs of backing down, striking economic and infrastructure targets in neighboring Gulf Arab countries, even as Trump demanded Iran open the Straits of Hormuz. In an expletive-laden post Sunday morning, Trump expanded upon earlier threats, promising strikes on Iran's power plants and bridges. He vowed the crazy bastards would be living in hell if the waterway isn't open to marine traffic by Tuesday. He ended his post with, "Praise be to Allah." The U.S. Airmen's extraction followed a search and rescue operation after the Friday crash of the F-15E Strike Eagle, as Iran also promised a reward for anyone who turned in an enemy pilot. Trump said the service member was injured but in stable condition. A second crew member was rescued earlier. The jet fighter was the first American aircraft to have crashed in Iran territory since the U.S. and Israel launched a war striking Iran on February 28th. Both sides have threatened and hit civilian targets, bringing warnings of possible war crimes. The war has killed thousands, shaken global markets, cut off key shipping routes, and spiked fuel prices. As Iran continues to exert control over the Straits of Hormuz, Trump in an earlier social media post threatened to unleash all hell if it isn't opened by Monday. He has issued such threats before and extended them when medias have claimed progress toward ending the war on agreeable terms. The threats came after Trump said last week that the U.S. had decimated Iran and would finish the war very fast. 2 days later, Iran shot down two U.S. military planes, showing the ongoing perils of the bombing campaign and the ability of a degraded Iranian military to continue to hit back. The other jet to go down was a U.S. A-10 attack aircraft. Neither the status of the crew nor exactly where it crashed was immediately known. On Sunday, Iran's TV aired a video showing what it claimed were parts of an American aircraft shut down by Iranian forces, along with a photo of thick black smoke rising into the air. The broadcaster said Iran had shot down an American transport plane and two helicopters that were part of the rescue mission. However, a regional intelligence official briefed on the mission told the Associated Press that the U.S. military blew up two transport planes due to a technical malfunction, forcing it to bring in an additional aircraft to complete the rescue. The official spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss the covert mission. Iran's military joint command on Sunday claimed that four U.S. aircraft were destroyed during the rescue mission, and warned of stepping up retaliatory attacks on regional oil and civilian infrastructure if the U.S. and Israel attacked such targets in the Islamic Republic, according to state television. "We once again repeat, if you commit aggression again and strike civilian facilities, our responses will be more forceful," a spokesman said in comments run by IRNA news agency. In Kuwait, Iranian drone attacks caused significant damage to power plants and a petrochemical plant. They also put a water desalination station out of service, according to the Ministry of Electricity. No injuries were reported, the ministry said. In Bahrain, a drone attack caused a fire at one of the national oil company's storage facilities and a state-run petrochemical plant, the kingdom's official news agency said. In the United Arab Emirates, authorities responded to fires at a petrochemical plant in Ruwais that they said were caused by intercepted debris and halting operations. The strikes came a day after Israel struck a petrochemical plant in Iran that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said generated revenue that it had used to fund the war. The petrochemical industry is a key sector in many Gulf states. Plants in Bahrain, Kuwait, and the UAE and Iran convert oil and gas into products like plastics, polymers, and fertilizer, bringing in billions in export revenue. Trump renewed his threats for Iran to open up the Strait of Hormuz by Monday or face consequences, writing Saturday in a social media post. Remember when I gave Iran 10 days to make a deal or open up the Hormuz Strait? Time is running out, 48 hours before all hell will rain down on them. The waterway is a critical choke point for commercial trade, especially oil and gas, moving from the Persian Gulf to Europe and Asia. Disruptions there have injected volatility into the market and pushed oil and gas importing countries to seek alternative sources. The doors of hell will be open to you if Iran's infrastructure is attacked, General Ali Abdali Al-Abadi with the country's Joint Military Command said late Saturday in response to Trump's renewed threats, state media reported. In turn, the general threatened all infrastructure used by the U.S. military in the region. Pakistan's Foreign Minister spokesperson Tahir Andrabi told AP that his government's efforts to broker a ceasefire are right on track after Islamabad last week said that it would soon host talks between the U.S. and Iran. Mediators from Pakistan, Turkey, and Egypt were working to bring the U.S. and Iran to the negotiating table, according to two regional officials. Their proposed compromise includes a cessation of hostilities to allow a diplomatic settlement, according to a regional official involved in the efforts, and a Gulf diplomat briefed on the matter. They spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss closed-door diplomacy. More than 1,900 people have been killed in Iran since the war began. In Gulf Arab states and the occupied West Bank, more than 24 people have died, while 19 have been reported dead in Israel and 13 U.S. service members have been killed. In Lebanon, more than 1,400 people have been killed and more than 1 million people have been displaced. 10 Israeli soldiers have died there. The next front page article is titled Zelensky Worried by Mideast War. This article was written by Sarah Yedekardes and Samia Kulab of the Associated Press, Dateline Istanbul. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expressed concern that a prolonged U.S.-Israeli war on Iran could further erode America's support for Ukraine as Washington's global priorities shift and Kiev braces for reduced deliveries of critically needed Patriot air defense missiles. Ukraine desperately needs more U.S.-made Patriot air defense systems to help it counter Russia's daily barrages, Zelensky said. Speaking to the Associated Press in an exclusive interview late Saturday in Istanbul, Russia's relentless pounding of urban areas behind the front line following its full-scale invasion of Ukraine more than 4 years ago has killed thousands of civilians. It has also targeted Ukraine's energy supply to disrupt industrial production of Ukraine's newly developed drones and missiles, while also denying civilians heat and running water in winter. We have to recognize that we are not the priority for today, Zelensky said. That's why I'm afraid a long Iran war will give us less support. The latest U.S. brokered talks between envoys from Moscow and Kiev ended in February with no sign of a breakthrough. Zelensky, who has accused Russia of trying to drag out negotiations while it presses on with its invasion, said Ukraine remains in contact with U.S. negotiators about a potential deal to end the war and has continued to press for stronger security guarantees. But he said even those discussions reflect a broader loss of focus from Ukraine. His most immediate concerns, Zelensky said, are the Patriots, essential for intercepting Russian ballistic missiles, as Ukraine still lacks an effective alternative. These U.S. systems were never delivered in sufficient quantities to begin with, Zelensky said. And if the Iran war doesn't end soon, the package, which is not very big for us, I think will be smaller and smaller day by day. That's why, of course, we are afraid, he said. Zelensky had been counting on European partners to help make the Patriot missiles purchase despite tight supply and limited U.S. production capacity. But the Iran war, now on its six-week, has sent shockwaves through the global economy and pulled in much of the wider Middle East region, further straining these already limited resources, diverting stockpiles and leaving Ukrainian cities more exposed to ballistic strikes. For Kiev, a key objective is to weaken Moscow's economy and make the war prohibitively costly. Surging oil prices driven by Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz are undermining that strategy by boosting the Kremlin's oil revenues and strengthening Moscow's capacity to sustain its war effort. In his interview with the AP, Zelensky said Russia draws economic benefits from the Middle East war, citing the limited easing of American sanctions on Russian oil. Russia gets additional money because of this, so yes, they have benefits, he said. Russian officials said Sunday that a fire broke out at a major oil refinery in the Zelensky-Novgorod region after a drone attack, while another drone damaged a pipeline at the Russian Baltic seaport of Primorsk, home to a major oil export terminal. No casualties were reported. Russia could reap a windfall from a surge in oil prices and the U.S. temporary waiver on Russian oil sanctions designed to ease supply shortages as the Iran war continues. Russia is one of the world's main oil exporters, and Asian nations are increasingly competing for Russian crude oil as an energy crisis mounts. In response, Ukraine has intensified its long-range drone attacks on Russian oil facilities, which have rattled Moscow. To keep Ukraine on the international agenda, Zelensky has offered to share Ukraine's hard-earned battlefield expertise with the United States and allies to develop effective countermeasures against Iranian attacks. Ukraine has met Russia's evolving use of Iran-made Shahed drones with growing sophistication, technological ingenuity, and low cost. Moscow significantly modified the original Shahed 136, rebranded as a Garand 2, enhancing its ability to evade air defenses and be mass-produced. Ukraine responded with quick innovation of its own, including low-cost interceptor drones designed to attack and destroy incoming drones. Zelensky said Ukraine is ready to share with Gulf Arab countries targeted by Iran its expertise and technology, including interceptor drones and sea drones, which Ukraine produces more than are used up, with funding from the Americans and its European partners. In return, these countries could help Ukraine with anti-ballistic missiles, Zelensky said. In late March, as the Iran war escalated, Zelensky visited Gulf Arab states to promote Ukraine's singular experience in countering Iran-made Shahed drones, leading to new defense cooperation agreements. Zelensky has also positioned Ukraine as a potential partner in safeguarding global trade routes, offering assistance in reopening the Strait of Hormuz by sharing Ukraine's experience of securing maritime corridors in the Black Sea. The next front page article title is More Carrier Paper Citations Issued by CBP. This article was written by Alexandra Markovich of the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting. For the first time in Arizona, U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents are using a Cold War-era law to ticket legal immigrants for minor offenses like not carrying their immigration documents, a break from the agency's long-standing focus on people in the country illegally. In the past year, federal agents in southwest Arizona issued more than 100 citations to individuals that included permanent residents, visa holders, and international students under a 1952 provision enacted to track non-citizens, according to law enforcement records reviewed by AZCIR. The tickets typically carry fines of about $80, though the statute allows for up to 30 days in prison and fines as high as $5,000. Citations remain in federal records for 30 years and can complicate green card or citizen applications, potentially making people more vulnerable to deportation as the Trump administration expands efforts to revoke legal status. Most tickets are resolved administratively, which means recipients forfeit the opportunity to challenge the stops in court. The enforcement shift follows President Donald Trump's first-day executive order directing federal agents to prioritize all immigration laws. A subsequent memo instructed U.S. attorneys to pursue criminal prosecutions under Section 1308E of Title 8 of the U.S. Code, the Carry Your Papers provision at the center of the recent citations. This is what distinguishes the Trump administration from previous administrations, said S. Deborah Kang, an immigration historian at the University of Virginia who studies border enforcement. Trump is one of the first presidents in the past half century who has gone after not only undocumented immigrants, but also legal immigrants. All of the Arizona tickets were issued by agents in the Yuma sector, which runs from the Imperial Sand Dunes in California to the boundary between Yuma and Pima counties. Some stemmed from routine inspections at ports of entry or border patrol checkpoints near the U.S.-Mexico border, while others followed agents approaching people at rest areas and bus stops. Most resulted from roving traffic stops in southern Arizona highways as drivers traveled east of Yuma. Border patrol agents must have reasonable suspicion of a crime before stopping a vehicle, a lower standard than probable cause, but one that still requires some factual basis. In nearly all of the cases reviewed by AZCIR, agents did not document a specific reason for the stop. CBP did not respond to detailed questions over the past 6 weeks, including about the agency's protocol for documenting reasonable suspicions after conducting a traffic stop. The U.S. Border Patrol continues to utilize all available tools to apply consequences for individuals who violate federal law, a CBP spokesperson said in an email statement. For Arizonans, the tactics echoes the state infamous 2010 Show Me Your Papers law, Bill number 1070, which led to discriminatory enforcement and was largely struck down after widespread public backlash. Even under SB 1070, though, the enforcement provision requiring legal immigrants to carry their papers never made it past the courts. Records show that in cases when nationality was recorded by Border Patrol, a majority of those cited were from Mexico and other Latin American countries. Citations were less common among people from China or the Middle East, and only one European was ticketed during roving highway patrols. We're seeing what is unmistakably racial profiling, both in Arizona and elsewhere in more contentious places like Minneapolis, said Noah Schramm, immigrants' rights and border policy strategist at ACLU Arizona. The tickets permit federal agents to terrorize Arizona communities in a way that we haven't seen since the days of SB 1070. The practice has been used sporadically since the CBP was formed in 2003 with roughly 260 such tickets issued nationwide through 2024, according to data from the Central Violations Bureau, a national administrative system that processes federal citations. Enforcement began to pick up in the past few years in areas near the Mexican border, as first reported by San Diego-based InNewsSource. But it has since moved inland to cities like Chicago, and related prosecutions, though still uncommon, increased in the first half of 2025. Experts say the consequences could extend well beyond the people who receive citations. Anyone who could be perceived as an immigrant may feel compelled to carry papers at all times, citing spillover effects even for U.S. citizens, said Annie Lai, an immigrant's rights attorney and professor at the University of California Irvine School of Law. The idea that we are a place where everybody has to carry their papers is not American, she said. That's not the kind of country that I think a lot of people think we should be. In Arizona, the revival of decades-old 1304E provision, which makes it a federal misdemeanor for non-citizens not to carry their immigration documents at all times, is playing out during routine encounters that once would have been unlikely to trigger immigration enforcement. In one instance, a Border Patrol agent approached a Canadian citizen with a U.S. green card walking from his hotel in Yuma to get breakfast, stating in his written report that he was checking whether the man needed help. After asking whether he was a U.S. citizen, the agent cited him for failing to carry his green card. At Love's Travel Center on Interstate 8 in Yuma, an agent greeted an Arizona State University student from South Korea and asked whether she was carrying her student visa, the agent's report stated. When she said it was at her apartment, he issued a ticket. Several citations began with calls from local police or Arizona Department of Public Safety troopers during vehicle stops. In one case, police requested translation assistance from Border Patrol. The agent then took the individual into custody and issued a ticket. In all, those cited include permanent residents, people on work visas, international students, and at least one person with deferred action for childhood arrival status. All legally present in the U.S. but not carrying immigration documents when they were stopped. Others were Mexican nationals with border crossing cards but without an accompanying I-94 form documenting their legal entry and authorized length of stay. Multiple people told agents they did not know they were required to carry their papers at all times, according to reasonable suspicion statements obtained by AZCIR. Many immigrants don't routinely carry green cards, which cost up to $465 to replace, though immigration attorneys are beginning to recommend otherwise. Some people showed photos of their documents or other forms of ID, including driver's licenses, but were still cited. Agents have also stopped people on rural highways within a couple of hours' drive of the border, issuing more than 70 tickets for immigration offenses along Arizona interstates in the past year. In almost all vehicle stops reviewed by AZCIR, agents did not document a justification for pulling drivers over in their statements of reasonable suspicion. Attorneys said agents aren't necessarily required to include an explanation in the report itself, since they can provide it later during court testimony. But when tickets were resolved administratively, as most have been so far, the stop is never contested in court. That means the government's rationale for traffic stop may never be subject to additional review. The lack of documentation and scrutiny raises constitutional concerns over the Fourth Amendment, which protects individuals against unreasonable searches and seizures, lawyers told AZCIR. When the report specifically instructs officers to list the reason for a stop, the officer does not do so, and it certainly casts a question the legitimacy of the stop, ACLU Arizona immigration attorney John Mitchell said. A small but growing number of cases are now being prosecuted by U.S. attorneys for violating registration requirements among other immigration laws. From January 20th to July 2025, prosecutors have filed 7 such criminal cases in Washington, New Mexico, Texas, and Alabama, compared with 10 such cases in all of 2024 and none in the 9 years prior, as reported in a news source. Immigration experts say the decision to pursue legal residence can reverberate beyond the individual cited. By targeting legal immigrants, especially in places where mixed-status families are common, the administration can signal to the undocumented members of that person's family or community to be on notice, Kang said. If this can happen to a legal immigrant, then of course it can happen to someone without papers, she said. Ultimately, the message is that no one is safe. The initial legal basis for today's Carry Your Papers law is the 1940 Alien Registration Act, a World War II-era national security law that created an inventory of non-citizens. 12 years later, during a time of anti-communism fervor, a provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act made it a crime for immigrants not to carry the documents. But that law was structured around registration, not deportation. It promised non-citizens who registered a path to citizenship and made failing to register not entering the country illegally a crime. Though the statute remains on the books for decades and is rarely enforced, the Trump administration has begun actively deploying it as part of a broader push to resurrect a little-used provision of laws that affect both legal and undocumented immigrants. Federal officials have directed unauthorized immigrants to register with the government and fine those who remain in the country up to $1,000 per day. The administration has also invoked the centuries-old Alien Enemies Act to deport migrants based on alleged gang affiliations and is pursuing efforts to eliminate birthright citizenship for children born to parents who are undocumented or have temporary legal status. In Arizona, federal agents have also begun citing permanent residents and visa holders for failing to notify immigration authorities of address changes within 10 days of moving, another seldom enforced law that carries penalties of up to 30 days in jail and fines of up to $5,000. A missed address update is now grounds for deportation unless the person can justify the lapse or show it wasn't a deliberate violation. Federal law is full of a lot of different provisions and requirements that this administration resurrected and used in ways that have never been used before, said Hiroshi Motomura, an immigration law professor at UCLA. The enforcement push is unfolding alongside a temporary U.S. Supreme Court order issued in September 2025 that allows federal agents to consider race or ethnicity in traffic stops while the court decides whether the approach is constitutional. Civil rights advocates say the so-called Kavanaugh stops effectively rubber stamp racial profiling in ways that state and federal courts previously rejected under Arizona's SB 1070. Border Patrol has emerged as a primary enforcement arm of these revived tactics. Created in 1924 to police the border, today's expanded agency now operates far beyond it, acting as a de facto federal police force at the president's discretion. Trump's inland operations have led to violent clashes with the public, including two high-profile killings of U.S. citizens in Minneapolis. Taken together, legal scholars say the revival of dormant statutes and the widening reach of the federal enforcement mark a broader shift in how immigration law is being applied, one aimed at redefining the boundaries of American identity. This is a move to turn the clock back to a narrower version of who belongs in America, Motomura said. The next headline article is titled Heartbreak at Final Hour. This article was written directly by the Arizona Daily Star. Arizona's men's basketball Final Four run came to an end Saturday in Indianapolis when the Wildcats fell 91-73 to Michigan. The semifinal loss was just the third for the Wildcats all season long, but it was the biggest margin of defeat UA experienced. It had lost by only 4 and 3 points respectively to Big 12 foes Kansas and Texas Tech in February. Though a national title continues to elude the Wildcats, with the first and only coming in 1997, their 36 wins set a single-season program record, besting the 1987-88 team that locked down 35 victories and put an end to a 25-year Final Four drought. The next item is titled Pope Urges Peace in First Easter Mass. This article was written by Colleen Berry and Paolo Santalucia of the Associated Press, Dateline Vatican City. Pope Leo XIV celebrated his first Easter Mass as Pontiff with a call Sunday to lay down arms and seek peace to global conflicts through dialogue, but he departed from a tradition of listing the world's woes by name in the Urbi et Urbi blessing from the Loggia of the St. Peter's Basilica. Leo, the first U.S.-born pope, emphasized Easter's message of hope as a celebration of Jesus' resurrection after being crucified in both the blessings and his homily. Let us allow our hearts to be transformed by his immense love for us. Let those who have weapons lay them down. Let those who have the power to unleash wars choose peace, not a peace imposed by force, but through dialogue, not with the desire to dominate others, but to encounter them, the Pope implored. With the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran in its second month and Russia's ongoing campaign in Ukraine, Leo acknowledged a sense of indifference to the deaths of thousands of people, to the repercussions of hatred and division that conflicts, to the economic and social consequences they produce. Without mentioning the wars by names, Leo quoted his predecessor, Pope Francis, who during his last public appearance from the same loggia last Easter, reminded the faithful of the great thirst for death or killing we witness each day. Francis, weakened by a long illness, died the next day on Easter Monday. The Urbi et Urbi blessing, Latin for the city and the world, has traditionally included a litany of the world's woes. Leo followed that formula during his Christmas blessing. There was no immediate explanation for the shift. Earlier, Leo addressed some 50,000 faithful from an open-air altar in St. Peter's Square, flanked with the white roses, while the steps leading down to the piazza where the faithful gathered were filled with spring perennials, symbolically resonating with the Pope's words. He implored the faithful to keep their hope in the face of death, which lurks in the abuses that crush the weakest among us, because the idolatry of profit that plunders the earth's resources, because of violence of war that kills and destroys. Speaking from the Loggia, the Pope announced a prayer vigil for peace April 11th in the Basilica. On this day of celebration, let us abandon every desire for conflict, domination, and power, and implore the Lord to grant his peace to a world ravaged by wars and marked by a hatred and indifference that makes us feel powerless in the face of evil, he said. The next front page article is titled Congo to Receive U.S. Deportees. This article was written directly by the Associated Press, Dateline Kinshasa, Congo. Congo will receive some migrants as part of a new deal under the Trump administration's third country program, its government said Sunday, the latest such African nation to receive migrants being deported from the U.S. The deportees will start arriving in Congo this month, the Congolese Ministry of Communications said in a statement, without further details on the date or the number of deportees expected. It described the arrangement as a temporary one that reflects Congo's commitment to human dignity and international solidarity. It would come with zero cost to the government, with the United States covering the needed logistics, it said. The U.S. has struck such third-country deportation deals with at least seven other African nations, many of them among countries hit the most by the Trump administration's policies that have restricted trade, aid, and migration. The Trump administration has spent at least $40 million to deport about 300 migrants to countries other than their own, according to a report released recently by the Democratic staff of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Lawyers and activists have raised questions over the nature of the deals with countries in Africa and elsewhere. Several of the African nations have signed such deals, have notoriously expressive comments and poor human rights records, including Eswatini, South Sudan, and Equatorial Guinea. The key bone of contention in many such agreements is that they involve many migrants with protection orders from a U.S. immigration judge not to be returned to their home countries over major safety concerns. Congo's government said no automatic transfer of deportees is planned, adding, each situation will be subject to individual review in accordance with the laws of the Republic and national security requirements. Now we'll pause to remind you that you are listening to a broadcast reading of the Arizona Daily Star from Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Michael Shannon, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss any part of this program, you can access it on demand anytime on our website, www.sunsounds.org, from the broadcast info and audio link. Sun Sounds is also available on your smart home device. Now we'll turn the page to the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star for several important and informative articles there. The first item is titled Feds Defend Futures Markets. This article was written by Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. Dateline Phoenix. The Trump administration wants a judge to preserve the right of Arizonans to bet right now on who will win the governor's race. Whether incumbent Republican Juan Ciscomani will keep a seat in Congress, and whether GOP voters will nominate Rodney Glassman or Warren Peterson for Attorney General. Ditto the right to try to make money by predicting who will be featured in Drake's new album, how high the unemployment rate will go, and who will be the bridesmaid for Taylor Swift, and even whether she will actually tie the knot by the end of the year. In a new court filing, Tiberius Davis, an assistant U.S. Attorney General, contends Congress gave exclusive authority to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to regulate wagering on future events that is done through federally regulated designated contract makers. That, he says, includes companies like Kelce. And that, Davis is telling the U.S. District Court Judge Michael Liberti, means Arizona cannot enforce its section of lawmaking it a Class 2 misdemeanor with a possible 4 months in county jail and fine, and a $750 fine for those who make bets on such races, whether on Kelce or what the CFTC calls other regulated financial exchanges. It isn't just about betting on election matters. Davis also wants the judge to void another Arizona statute that outlaws wagering on sports events unless Arizonans lay down their money with state regulators' entities. Here, too, he says the state can't say only it gets to decide who gets to take the bets. In fact, he says wagers placed through regulated financial exchanges like Kelce are exempt from other laws, making it a crime to bet on any other future contingency, like actual contracts now being offered on things like Swift's wedding details. What has drawn the new attention to the federal agency and the Trump administration's are criminal charges filed in Maricopa County Superior Court last month against Kelce by State Attorney General Chris Mays. Those came after undercover agents placed bets on 20 different contingencies listed on Kelce. Because Kelce is a business and not an individual, the penalties are somewhat stiffer. The violations of wagering on elections carry a maximum fine of $10,000. The other incidents can result in $20,000 fines. Kelce, for its part, has already filed its own legal papers in federal court asking Liberti to force Mays to back off. It raises the same claim as the CFTC of federal preemption. Liberti has already decided that the new lawsuit filed this week by the feds will be consolidated with the one filed by Kelce. But other crucial issue remains. Mays contends that federal courts lose their jurisdiction when there are criminal charges pending in state courts against the same parties. Liberti has yet to rule on the issue. It isn't only in Arizona where the Trump administration is moving to strip the state of its claimed regulatory powers. Similar lawsuits were also filed last week against Illinois and Connecticut. At the heart of all three lawsuits is the Federal Commodity Exchange Act. That law allows only the federal government to regulate futures, options, and what the law calls swaps, a type of financial transaction which can be used as a hedge against future risk. That generally allows producers of things like oil, metals, and even corn to lock in revenues, regardless of whether the market later goes up or down. The administration contends that under federal law, what Kelce and other firms known as designated contract markets are doing fits those definitions. Arizona disagrees, arguing that these are a form of wagering, and the only kind of wagering allowed in Arizona is what is regulated by the Arizona Department of Gaming. Not true, says Davis in the new filing. Congress enacted the Commodities Exchange Act, granting the CFTC exclusive jurisdiction to regulate those markets and enacting a comprehensive federal regulatory framework that preempts state laws that attempt to regulate the operation of or transactions on CFTC-regulated exchanges, he told the judge. And he contends the scope of what can be federally traded and protected from state gaming laws is quite broad. Events contracts are derivative state instruments that enable parties to trade on their predictions about whether future events, which may relate to economics or elections or climate or sports, or anything else with a potential financial, economic, or commercial consequence will occur, Davis said. All that goes to the bid by the administration to shut down not just the current Arizona lawsuit against Kelce, but any future attempts to enforce its gaming laws against similar platforms. The court should put an end to the ongoing efforts by the defendants to undermine the uniform application of federal law by declaring that Arizona laws regarding event wagering, betting and wagering, and election wagering are preempted by federal law as applied to event contract swaps listed for trading on CFTC-regulated designated contract markets and are thus unlawful, Davis told the judge. And he wants quick action. Unless restrained and enjoined by the court, defendants are likely to continue their attempts to subvert federal law and the exclusive jurisdiction to regulate event contracts conferred on the CFTC by Congress, Davis wrote. There is also what could be considered a political component to all this. Kelce last year named Donald Trump Jr. as a strategic advisor to the firm. Don's bold business mindset and deep understanding of market dynamics perfectly align with Kelce's mission to redefine how America engages with information, Tarek Mansour, the company's co-founder, said in a statement. His strategic guidance will help accelerate our growth, refine our market strategies, and open doors to new partnerships and audiences. All that followed Kelce suing the Biden administration and winning a district court ruling in 2024, allowing it to take wagers on elections. That paved the way for betting on the 2024 presidential race. The case disappeared after Trump was elected. And the president's son, in a post on social media, said it was that wagering on his father's race that convinced him to join Kelce. On election night at Mar-a-Lago, which while biased outlets called the race a coin toss, my family and close friends used the prediction market Kelce to know we won hours ahead of the fake news media, he wrote. The next article is titled I-10 Widening Scheduled in Wild Horse Pass Area. This article was written by Lauren DeYoung of the Arizona Republic. A major commuter road route and a thoroughfare south of Phoenix will see a traffic shift for about a year, according to the Arizona Department of Transportation. Interstate 10 is a key economic corridor connecting Arizona's two biggest metros. A 26-mile stretch south of Phoenix called the Wild Horse Pass Corridor serves the Gila Indian River, the Gila River Indian Community, as well as areas like Casa Grande and South Chandler. For two decades, ADOT has been working to widen I-10 between Phoenix and Tucson. The Wild Horse Pass Corridor is the last remaining section with only two lanes in each direction. When the work is done, I-10 will be at least three lanes wide in both directions, all the way from Phoenix to Tucson. For now, motorists will drive on the outside shoulder in each direction to accommodate construction. Here's what commuters need to know. What is the I-10 Wild Pass project? The project encompasses the last remaining stretch of I-10 that is only two lanes in each direction. The freeway is being widened to three lanes in each direction between Loop 202 in Chandler and State Route 387 north of Casa Grande. Other project elements include adding one HOV lane in each direction between Loop 202 and Riggs Road, constructing a flyover ramp from eastbound State Route 347 to eastbound I-10, constructing or reconstructing interchanges and bridges, widening bridges, improving lighting, CCTV cameras, and other infrastructure. The project is estimated to cost $967 million. The project is being constructed in phases, with the first phase slated for completion in mid-2026. The other three sections are expected to begin in 2026. The entire project is expected to be completed in 2029. Where is the Wild Horse Pass project? The project runs along I-10 between Loop 202 in South Phoenix and SR 387 north of Casa Grande. What is the traffic shift? Motorists will drive on the right shoulder on each direction. The eastbound traffic shift started March 31st, while the westbound traffic shift began April 2nd. The traffic shift will be in place for about a year, ADOT said. Where is the traffic shift? Traffic will be directed onto the shoulder in each direction between mileposts 181 and 187 near SR 387/Pennell Avenue. The next item is titled Immigration Enforcement is Central to a new Musical. This article was written by Kathleen E. Birch of the Arizona Daily Star. Borderlands Theater is mounting its first ever original musical at Leo Rich Theater, a project that was 5 years in the making. Anita opened in preview performances on Thursday and will run through April 19th. Borderlands Associate Artistic Director Milta Ortiz wrote the book, while the music, infused with cumbia, bolero, reggaeton, R&B, and pop, was composed by Quetzal Guerrero, a singer-songwriter and classically trained violinist. Ortiz and Guerrero started working on the music in 2020, inspired by the stories of undocumented minors being separated from their parent at the border and housed in shelters. The story, though, goes much deeper. It focuses more on the resilience and the joy and pride of Anita that is inspiring to people around her that makes them want to help her follow a dream, Ortiz said. The story begins as Anita remembers the moment she is separated from her parents. While they flee agents, Anita is caught and taken to a shelter. In the shelter, Anita meets five girls, all minors of various ages from grade school to high school. This might remind you of the musical Annie, but in Anita, the orphan has no Daddy Warbucks to rescue her from her plight. Anita has the resourceful little girl and a savvy PR agent named Luz, whose job it is to make the Southwest Skies shelter appear more like a Hilton than a hellhole. When she meets Anita, they have a connection and sort of as a PR ploy, she decides to help Anita, Ortiz explained. In the end, Lutz realizes there is more to life than what she had planned for herself. In one scene in the Pueblo marketplace, the girl sings a fiery salsa song in Spanish titled Ten Cusitado. Be careful. That warns Anita that life can be dangerous. The lyrics are saying, be careful, look out, you know it's not safe, but here in this place we have everything you need. You won't go hungry, we have your back here, but still be careful because not everyone else is like that, Ortiz said. Another song, Young Americans, expresses the sentiment of being the next gen making their place in the world. A reprise sung by the girls talks about being the young Americans. Don't be afraid of us, Ortiz said. There's a lot of the sentiment of we are humans and we are part of this culture, of this American culture, and we're here to share joy and pride, she explained. I think the goal of the musical is for people to see the little boy in the bunny's ears who was separated from his father for a week. Ortiz was referring to the incident in late January when five-year-old Liam Cuneo Rajos, who was wearing a hat with baby blue bunny ears, was separated when ICE apprehended his father in Minneapolis and later detained with his father. We sort of give voice to him. We see him in the news. You've seen his photo, and now you get to see more fleshed-out character of somebody that's representative of Liam, Ortiz said. I think the best feedback that I got from the development readings was people saying, I feel seen, I feel heard, and it's immigrants that are saying this. The debut of Anita comes after a handful of public readings and workshops over the past 5 years in which the play was massaged, including cutting some 40 pages. Ortiz said the play has had additional revisions right up to Thursday's preview. Ortiz said Borderlands, which he runs with her husband, Mark David Pignatti, hopes to do a musical every other year or sooner if we can find musicals that fit our mission to amplify Borderlands' voices and stories. This is the first time Borderlands has performed in Leo Rich, 260 South Church Avenue since 2018. Opening weekend performances are at 2 and 7 p.m. Saturday, April 4th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, April 5th. Performances are at 7 p.m. Thursdays and Fridays, 2 and 7 p.m. Saturdays and 2 p.m. Sundays through April 19th. There are no performances April 11th through 12th. Tickets are $52.15 with discounts available through borderlandstheater.org/Anita. The next item from the Tucson and Regents section of the Arizona Daily Star is titled Don't Pet the Beatles. This article was written by Henry Breen of the Arizona Daily Star. Judging by a recent swarm spotted at Catalina State Park, it's blistering beetle season in southern Arizona. And as the name of the bug suggests, it's best to look but not touch. Arizona is home to 150 different species of blister beetles, and they all share one unpleasant characteristic. A toxic defensive chemical called cantharidin in their blood can cause severe skin irritation and blistering. The ones now being seen at the state park on the eastern edge of Oro Valley are orange and black, variety known commonly as master blister beetles or desert blister beetles. You're most likely seeing the mating swarms that happen this time of year, said entomologist Gene Hall, who manages the University of Arizona massive insect collection. Master blister beetles typically emerge in spring to find mates and feed on brittlebush and other native flowers. They can grow to as much as 2 inches long with bright red-orange colorings in their heads, legs, and upper thoraxes and textured black shells over their wings. They're kind of freaky looking, said Catalina State Park manager Steve Haas. He first noticed them about 3 weeks ago near the junction of Canyon Loop Trail and the Sutherland Trail. He had never seen beetles like that, let alone so many of them. In his 15 years with the park, he said, I just kind of did a double take. They definitely stand out, especially when there's a bunch of them in one little bush, Haas said. By Friday morning, the swarm had moved to a different part of the canyon loop where hundreds of beetles could be found feeding and fornicating in the bush along the trail, less than half a mile from the parking lot. Though they can fly, these bugs seem mostly content to scuttle along the ground and climb into the low weeds and grass in search of blossoms to eat. Some of the males could be seen courting females by climbing on their backs and brushing their heads with their antennas. Others are being dragged along behind their still foraging mates, since two bugs can stay attached to each other for hours, sometimes a day or more, once mating begins. Other species most commonly seen in the Tucson areas are the Iron Cross blister beetle, which runs slightly smaller than the master and is easily distinguished by its red head and black, and yellow back marked by a black cross. According to Hall and other U of A researchers, master blister beetles mostly stick to the desert and don't often turn up in agricultural fields, but the adult bugs can do some damage if enough of them invade a garden or a crop. The bigger risk they pose is by contaminating food and forage products during harvesting. If enough of the beetle toxin is ingested, it can cause illness or death, especially in horses, though instances of such poisoning are rare, and usually the result of hay bales with dead beetles in them. An informal poster produced by Hall and Company notes that while no antidote exists for cantharidin poisoning, not all species produce the same amount of the toxin. Little is known about how cantharidin levels vary in individual beetles, the researcher said. In other words, if you spot one during your hike, feel free to snap a picture, but don't pick it up. And now, from the Nation of the World section of the Arizona Daily Star, an article titled, DHS Pauses Warehouse Purchases During Review. This article was written by Rebecca Santana and Heather Hollingsworth of the Associated Press. Dateline, Washington. The Department of Homeland Security is pausing the purchase of new warehouses intended to house immigrants as it scrutinizes all contracts signed under the former Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, according to a senior Homeland Security official. The development comes just days after the new Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen was sworn in last week to lead a department that was steeped in controversy during Noem's tenure, but also central to President Trump's mass deportation agenda. The official spoke on condition of anonymity because they are not authorized to speak publicly on the matter. News of the pause was first reported by NBC News. The official also said that warehouse purchases that were already made are also being scrutinized. When asked about reports of the pause, the Department of Homeland Security said in the statement that, as with any transition, we are reviewing agency policies and proposals. The department also noted that Mullen said during his confirmation hearing that he wanted to work with community leaders and be good partners. Mullen inherited a $38.3 billion plan to boost detention capacity to 92,000 beds by acquiring 8 large-scale detention centers capable of housing 7,000 to 10,000 detainees each and 16 smaller regional processing centers. The plan was hatched during Noem's tenure but immediately ran into intense opposition around the country by residents and communities opposed to such large immigration and customs enforcement facilities in the neighborhoods. Many objected on moral grounds to ICE's presence in the neighborhood, while others questioned whether the facility could be a drain on local resources such as sewer and water systems. So far, 11 warehouses have been purchased in Arizona, Georgia, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Utah, with the federal government spending a combined $1.074 billion. But lawsuits are pending in three other states. Meanwhile, the capacity of at least one warehouse has been scaled back. Plans initially called for a warehouse in the Phoenix suburb of Surprise to be used as a 1,500-bed processing site, but Homeland Security now plans to cap occupied beds at 542. Surprise Mayor Kevin Sarda said during a news conference on Monday, "In many cases, mayors, county commissioners, governors, and members of Congress learned about ICE's ambitions only after the agency bought or leased space for detainees, leading to shock and frustration even in areas that have backed Trump. The warehouse plan ran into challenges from the start. 8 deals were scuttled in places like Kansas City, Missouri, where owners decided not to sell. Pressed by the lack of information during his confirmation hearing, Mullen acknowledged there had been issues. "We've got to protect the homeland. We're going to do that," Mullen said. "But obviously we want to work with community leaders." Mullen, who took over and expanded his family's plumbing businesses before representing Oklahoma in the U.S. House and Senate, said, "The one thing I do know is construction." He noted that most municipalities don't have the capacity and the infrastructure for waste and water. "So it's important that we're talking to the communities, and if we're having additional needs, we can work with the cities," he said at his confirmation hearing earlier this month. Due to time constraints, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Arizona Daily Star, the April 6, 2026 edition. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, this is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. Thank you very much for listening.